Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today is Super Tuesday. Citizens in 10 states are voting in the Republican presidential race. Those who follow money in politics say today should actually be called Super PAC Tuesday because so much cash is flowing into these campaigns. Between February 29th and March 4th, in just 5 days, the Super PACs Winning the Future and the Red, White, and Blue Fund have poured over $3 million into the Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum campaigns. Mitt Romney's Restore Our Future campaign spent $2.7 million during the same period. Now, because there's no mandatory disclosure of super PACs, it's really hard to know who's funding these campaigns. We do know that Las Vegas casino magnate Sheldon Adelson has given $10 million to Newt Gingrich's super PAC. And he says if Gingrich goes down, he'll donate even more money to Mitt Romney. And then on the Democratic side, the Obama team recently announced plans to endorse super PACs, and we'll get details on those today, even though they are fairly new. But President Obama has been traveling across the country, going to dinners costing $38,500 per plate. Now, the 2010 Supreme Court decision allows corporations, unions, and citizens to raise and spend unlimited campaign funds via political action committees, known as super PACs, as long as they don't work directly with the candidate. Now, they're not supposed to work with the candidates, but they do function just like a campaign without any accountability. The 2010 presidential election is expected to cost a whopping $7 billion, and it could be even higher. A number of states and communities are pushing for an amendment to the Constitution declaring that corporations are not people. There's a resolution here in California, and that was just referred to the Judiciary Committee, and we'll talk about that today. Also today, at least 52 towns in Vermont are considering amendments. But is this the best solution? And what will it take to remove money from politics? Today, we are joined by Jonah Minkoff-Zern. He's senior organizer of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign, which is building public support for a constitutional amendment that would address the impact of Citizens United by restoring the First Amendment and fair elections to the people. Hi, Jonah. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And we're also joined by Michael Beckel. He's a politics reporter at the Center for Public Integrity, where he focuses on super PACs and the influence of money in politics. Michael previously worked as the money in politics reporter at the Center for Responsive Politics. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. So we've done so many shows about Citizens United, but Jonah, let's really talk about how we got to this point. I mean, it's amazing to see so much money being thrown around. And unless you're someone like a Sheldon Adelson who kind of brags about the $10 million he gave to Gingrich, it's really hard to pinpoint where exactly this money's coming from.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, part of the danger of this is that the money does not have to be disclosed. So we have no idea who's spending what on who. Not only is this tremendous amount of money pouring into our election cycle, but no one's accountable for the money they're spending.
And so how did we get here?
It's been a process. The Supreme Court has kind of eroded protections for campaign finance laws over a period of time. A significant ruling was in 1976, the Buckley ruling, which said that campaign spending, that money is a form of free speech, a protected form of speech, and the government really had very limited options for how it regulated that form of spending on elections. And then the court followed up with the idea. For the last 100 years, the court has ruled that corporations have the same constitutionally protected rights as people, that corporations are people as far as the court's concerned. And using those two pieces of both misguided logic, that money is speech and that corporations are people, the court put those things together and ruled that corporations, just like individuals, can spend unlimited amounts of money in influencing our election cycle. And it's really had a tremendous impact over the last 2 years, and we're about to see just how bad things can get in this election cycle.
And Michael, what would you add to that?
I would add that there's two types of vehicles that we're seeing on the national level that are spending just boatloads of money. We have this new creature on the political landscape called the super PAC, and we also see a lot of politically involved nonprofit organizations, groups that are organized under Section 501c4 of the U.S. tax code. And the rules of the game vary depending on if you are a super PAC or if you are a 501c4 organization. The viewer out there is going to see a television ad, and the ad or the radio ad that they hear on the radio might say, or is going to say, paid for by, and then a group's name. And that group could be Restore Our Future, or Winning Our Future, or Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow. The barest requirements that every group has depends on just that. What is their name? And that is the only requirement that the spending game has. If you are a super PAC, at least once a quarter, or sometimes even once a month, you have to file with the Federal Election Commission who is funding your group. You have to put down the individual or the company that is giving you money. But if you're a 501c4 organization, there's no disclosure requirement. There's no public disclosure if you are a 501c4 organization about who's funding your group.
And these are being referred to, these 501c4s, as shadow super PACs.
Exactly. There has been a flood of spending by 501c4 organizations and also 501c5 or 501c6 groups. And these new politically involved nonprofit organizations are having a larger footprint with every election. Previously, corporations were prohibited from spending money on express advocacy. You couldn't just run an advertisement with your corporate money. But in the wake of these recent legal changes, corporations, either directly or through a super PAC or a 501c organization, are finding more ways to have their money involved in the process.
And Michael, we're going to try to call you back because we've got some static on your line. Let's dive into this a little bit more, Jonah. Ari Berman had a great piece looking at all of this in Tom Dispatch. He reports that there are now more than 300 super PACs registered with the Federal Election Commission. 196 donors have provided nearly 80% of the money raised by these super PACs last year by giving $100,000 or more each. He says this is completely going to change the game. You know, the Obama administration likes to talk about all of the small donors, but he believes that the small donors are going to be a tiny percentage because of these super PACs. He reports that before Citizens United, the maximum amount one person could give to a candidate was $2,500. For a political action committee, it was $5,000. For a political party committee, it was $30,000. But now the sky's the limit for a super PAC. And Michael was just talking about these 501c4s, which means that you can give as much money as possible in secret. I know it's hard to find out who's behind these. Sheldon Adelson has gotten a lot of attention. But who else do we need to be looking at? Who else is behind some of these big, big super PACs?
Well, even before Citizens United, the problem was bad, and we could see how much the various different industries were spending to influence elections, and they were doing it kind of in roundabout ways, but they were still spending substantial amounts of money to influence how elections worked. So it was like things like the gas and energy industry, the oil, the major oil companies, the tobacco industry, the major agribusiness. And as you go down the line, all the major mega corporations already were playing this game, already were spending the money. But now now the sky's the limit, as you said, and now the amount of money that they're able to spend is just tremendous. And it means that it's hard for someone to stand up, to say, for an elected official to say, I'm going to stand with the people. I'm going to stand against climate change and pass tough climate change legislation, when they know if they do that, and this has happened, that corporations will spend a tremendous amount of money to get them out of office. In the 2010 election cycle, 58 out of the 74 contests were power change hands. The outside groups back the winner.
And what do you mean by power change, Hans?
So in the congressional races where the person in office lost or where the power changed hands in those races, there were 74 where the power changed hands. And out of those 58 of the 74, the winners had more money from outside groups.
Okay.
So it had a tremendous impact. So if someone wants to be good, if someone wants to do what's right or stand for the people or stand for the earth, they're going to lose their job. They're going to be, through this tremendous amount of money, they're going to be pushed out of office. And 2010 was just, the election cycle was just 11 months after the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling. And it's just scary how much money is going to be spent in this cycle. It's predicted that $8 billion is going to be spent in the 2012 election cycle.
Well, all right, so let's talk about solutions here, because a number of states across the country, from Maine, Hawaii, Vermont, here in California, they are pushing for an amendment to the Constitution declaring that corporations are not people. So many organizations are putting a lot of time and energy into Citizens United. A Harvard law professor, Lawrence Lessig, says that overturning Citizens United is not enough. He says, the day before Citizens United was decided, quote, our democracy was fine and Citizens United broke it. But, of course, the democracy was already broken. So what are your thoughts on that, Jonah?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that the influence that these mega corporations were having on our society and through the money that the other ways that they were able to get to give money to the election cycle through having massing out their contributions from their members, and through individual donations, that our democracy, the 99% didn't have real access to the decision making process. That the people who were making these large contributions even before Citizens United were a very small percent of the electorate. And those were the people who had power and influence over our country. And we really see a growing movement of people now saying it's enough, that the 99% are not being heard, that the government is not representing us. And it's because of this tremendous amount of money in our electoral system that we don't have a real voice, and that what's important to us is not being represented in Washington. And I think there's this confusion that's been laid that government is a bad thing, that people have put out there, and very intentionally, that people who benefit from not being regulated have put out this confusion that government is a bad thing. In my eyes, government is the will and the voice of the people, if it's effective, if it's a real democracy. And I think what we need to be fighting for is to restore our democracy. And that does mean more than overturning Citizens United. It means addressing the two pillars that Citizens United stood on. It means addressing the fact that campaign contributions are not a form of speech, that's not something that our Constitution meant to protect as a form of speech. And it's not something that should be allowed to stand in society. We don't have a democracy if that's the case, if our government can't regulate campaign spending. And then the other pillar was that corporations have the same rights as individuals. And it's just, at a very basic sense, it's a ludicrous concept that corporations should be granted the same protections as individuals. And it gives corporations free reins, for example, beyond just election spending. If the EPA wants to go look at a Chevron plant and see if something's wrong, see if something's going wrong there, if they're not up to par in their pollution standards, they have to call Chevron in advance and tell them they're coming, because if not, they would violate search and seizure laws. So the ways that corporations have been able to influence our legal system because of this corporations as person doctrine has really also been a violation of the rights of individuals and the rights of us to be able to protect ourselves, our communities, and our environment.
And Michael, what can you tell us about, I mean, going back to Citizens United, because that does, it's getting so much attention. There are so many groups spending a lot of time and money to try to overturn this. What are you seeing happening around the country, and what do you think about Lawrence Lessig's comments that this is about so much more than Citizens United?
Well, if you look at what's happening over the 30 years of campaign finance rulings in the court, you really see two principles. On one side of the spectrum, you've got those advocating for greater First Amendment rights. You see time and time again that political incumbents are very hard to defeat. And one way of challenging an incumbent is to have a lot of money behind your political effort. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have folks saying there's a compelling government interest in preventing corruption and the appearance of corruption. They're saying our democracy functions best when there is trust and public integrity in the electoral system. And these are the two tensions that the Supreme Court weighs and is trying to reconcile with the actions they take. Currently, there's a lot of folks on the conservative end of the spectrum saying that Citizens United is great. It has allowed people to come together and form groups, and these groups will put more contests in play. These groups will be able to challenge more incumbents. And of course, incumbent politicians want to protect themselves and limit the amount of money that can be spent against them. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got folks like Professor Lessig saying that there is more that needs to be done to incentivize participation in the electoral system. If you are creating a public financing system or a public-private financing system, that's one model that folks are advocating for. Not just the current system where private money can come in at whatever level to super PACs or up to a certain level with the federal candidates, but there are folks who are advocating for a public financing system where small dollar donors are incentivized and rewarded with matching dollars. And that's one model that some folks are proposing as a way forward to move into a hybrid system where there's some public money and some private money is still in the game.
That is Michael Beckel. He's a politics reporter at the Center for Public Integrity, where he focuses on super PACs. We're also joined by Jonah Minkoff-Zern, senior organizer of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. And we'd love to hear from you. How are you making sense of what we're dealing with right now, with so much money flooding into these campaigns? And oftentimes it's really hard to know where this money is coming from because of the lack of disclosure rules. What are your thoughts on this? How is this affecting democracy in the United States? What steps do you think should be taken to remove the influence of big money from politics? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you work with a group that's trying to take money out of politics, what sort of strategies are you using? What are your thoughts on so much attention on Citizens United, even though the solutions are much bigger than that, and we'll talk about those. And if you have any questions about what we do know about these backers, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Denzel in Berkeley. Hi, Denzel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'd like you to discuss the following idea that nothing is really going to change in terms of corporate money warping our institutions and our elections until the individual voter and groups of voters make it an issue and demand of each candidate that they give an answer to how they feel about this and what are they going to do to try to stop it. And I think, barring that, nothing is going to change. And I think that the Supreme Court would quite possibly try to overturn anything that legislators would come up with and say it's unconstitutional. And so maybe a constitutional amendment is the only ultimate goal. However, it is possible that if the voters insist on it and demand of each candidate, make it an issue with each candidate, that something will be legislated that that will stick, that the Supreme Court won't overcome. And given the possibility that rich folks and extreme wealth will actually warp and degrade our actual system of voting. And I think this is a great danger.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. And this is actually an interesting question. I have to admit, I don't watch many of the debates, but there have been almost 25 or more of them. And Jonah or Michael, have these candidates been asked about these super PACs and where they're getting all of their money?
Well, I think that Newt Gingrich spoke out adamantly against super PACs after the Iowa caucuses, saying how detrimental an impact it was having on our election cycle. And it's actually interesting that Republicans are polling at the most right now against Citizens United because they've had to deal with this money. So Republicans who are aware of the ruling, which is 54%, are 4-1 saying that's having a negative impact on the election cycle. So it's really played a big role. And I'd love to also just quickly address Denzel's question about getting politicians to take a stand on this. And that's right on point right now in Washington. That's where I'm calling from. We're working on the Hill to make this an election issue in the 2012 elections. And we're discussing launching a declaration where we have both people who are in Congress right now, as well as people who are campaigning, ask them to sign on to a declaration that they support a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United and related cases, because as we talked about, it's not just about Citizens United. So that is an exact line of attack that we're taking. And Nancy Pelosi has really played an important role in starting to bring people together around this issue. She really sees it as an important election issue, and she's really working closely with us. So we really encourage people in the Bay Area to thank her and to encourage her to really step up and do as much as she can on this issue. But she really is taking very important leadership in Congress right now.
And what is she doing exactly?
She's been working with us and is supportive of the idea of getting Congress on board for this, so getting some sort of declaration or some sort of way to have Congress sign on or to say, to ask people yes or no, do you support a constitutional amendment, and really pressuring people through the campaign cycle to commit to this. And it really is a great opportunity for both parties to unite around this issue, because people really across the board feel that Citizens United is having a negative impact, which is why it's a great issue to be pushing through the election. It's a very hard issue for people to stand on the other side of.
And quickly, Michael, before we go to break, have the candidates been asked questions about their super PACs at the debates?
Yeah, one of the things that has come out of this conversation, in fact, is the Romney campaign has said that super PACs aren't a good thing. But what they're advocating for instead of super PACs is unlimited contributions to the campaigns directly. So that's not the solution that many folks out there think is the best way forward. And one of the fascinating things about Professor Lessig's arguments and the presentations that he's made, he says that you really need to bridge the folks on the Occupy Wall Street movement and the Tea Party movement, bring people together on campaign finance reform in order to have an honest fight about every other issue.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'd love to hear from you. We're talking today about money and politics. What are your thoughts on this? What are the solutions? 866-798-8255. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.
Back to Your Call in just a moment. Students in high schools all around the Bay Area are preparing for careers in hospitality, law, and health science, and many other avenues of employment. If you'd like to help develop the talents of young people in the Bay Area, please think about taking on a summer student intern at your local business or nonprofit. And if you can't host an intern yourself but still would like to help, you can sponsor an internship. All of the details of the summer internship program from students all around the Bay Area are available on our website, and that, of course, is www.kalw.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about the path to justice for domestic workers. New York recently passed a domestic workers bill of rights, which provides standards and protections for an otherwise unregulated and often exploited workforce. A bill pending in California would do the same. So how are workers organizing? Are you a domestic worker? Do you employ one? And what do you think is fair treatment? How should it be enforced? That's tomorrow. Thursday, it's International Women's Day. We've got a lot of challenges at the national level, so we're actually going to visit battleground states to find out how women are organizing across the country, and we will talk about what happened in Virginia, in Richmond, when a number of women took to the Capitol to protest an ultrasound law and were arrested and met by cops wearing riot gear. So we'll be talking about that on Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about money in politics. There is so much cash flooding to the campaigns. It's often difficult to pinpoint where this cash is coming from because we don't have disclosure laws. What we do know is that there are more than 300 super PACs now registered with the Federal Elections Commission. And according to a recent Tom Dispatch piece, 196 donors have provided nearly 80% of the money raised by super PACs by giving $100,000 or more each. So what are your thoughts on this? How is this affecting what is happening in the elections? The presidential election is expected to cost up to $8 billion. What are the solutions to this issue? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. or post a comment at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Jonah Minkoff-Zern, senior organizer of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. And we are joined by Michael Beckel, politics reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. And let's hear from Gino in San Francisco. Hi, Gino. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, panelist, or, you know, well, it's obvious that, as in the words of Randy Newman, it's money that matters in the USA. Rich people control the elections and control the political process. To start, we could tax all their political contributions of over $100,000.
Oh.
You know, that
might be
worth put initiative on the ballot. And we could use the taxes from that money to fund publicly funded electoral processes to counteract the effects of those big contributions. Also, the rules about disclosure of these political contributions should be more open, more transparent, and enacted to create a process where we know who's actually making the contributions that affect the election of people that actually do things that control our lives.
Well, thank you for calling in. That's an interesting proposition to tax the money. What are your thoughts on that, Michael? Is anyone talking about that?
One of the areas that this is playing out in is in particular with the 501c4 organizations. These are groups that, if you give a large amount to, there can be a gift tax associated with them. They're not the same as a 501c3 charity organization. And there have been a few times where people, mainly Democrats, have asked the IRS to investigate these groups more because there have been concerns raised about whether or not these organizations are truly social welfare promoting groups, or if there are political committees in that sheep's clothing of the 501c4 vehicle.
And then again, to the question of disclosure, how are reporters like you trying to follow the money? What sort of resources do you have when there are no disclosure laws?
Well, disclosure is a very important part of the game, and the Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld the public's right to know One of the fascinating things about the Citizens United ruling was that it was really twofold. There was the very controversial 5-4 ruling that said corporations could spend unlimited amounts of their treasury funds expressly advocating for or against a federal candidate. But there was also a 8-1 ruling affirming disclosure and saying that transparency in the political process was a valuable thing. And thankfully, there are some disclosure rules out there. If you register with the IRS as a 527 organization, that is, if you are saying that you are a political group, you need to either report to the IRS or to the Federal Election Commission, if you're mainly involved in the election of federal candidates, money raised, money spent. And there are a lot of ways to follow the money in these disclosed forms. What's troubling is that more and more money is being funneled through 501c4 organizations that don't share these same disclosure requirements, or through corporate accounts or even shell accounts, where you will see a name on a piece of paper that upholds the letter of the law, but it's questionable whether that disclosure really upholds the spirit of the law.
Hmm. We're working at Public Citizen in various different ways to push disclosure laws, including on state level, passing state legislation calling for disclosure of all campaign contributions, working on a federal level to pass a disclose initiative, which unfortunately has been blocked by the Republicans. But we're pushing forward with that again. We're also working with trying to get the Obama administration to say that any corporations that have federal contracts need to disclose their campaign contributions, which is something they have the power to do. And also the Securities Exchange Commission could have the power to force disclosure of campaign contributions. So we're working in all those different angles to force disclosure. We don't think that's enough, but we do think that that's an important thing to be working for right now. Well,
and that wasn't my next question, because there, even before Citizens United, obviously so much money was flowing to these campaigns, but we were able to find out where it was coming from. So, for example, President Obama's top contributors in the last election included employees of Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, and Citigroup. How do the super PACs and the 501c4s change this? Are we going to see these Wall Street firms go through the sort of, I guess, old-fashioned channels, or are they going to go through the 501c4s so their donations are now secret?
One of the things that the super PAC vehicle allows is these special interests to spend even more money. Thanks to the existing disclosure rules, we know that about half of the money that the main pro-Romney super PAC has raised has come from Wall Street folks. This is individuals or organizations who work in that securities and investment world. And one way that groups can try to hide their donations is to go through the 501c4 channel. There are typically rules that say that if you are, say, another 501c4 or a 501c6 trade association, you have to file paperwork with the IRS, eventually disclosing how you're doling out money. You never have to report who your own donors are, but earlier this week, or last week, I guess, I published a report talking about how pharma, big pharma, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, had spent more than $9 million donating to politically active 501c4 organizations during the 2010 election. And all of that was publicly available on a 990 filing with the IRS that came out about 11 months after the election was over.
And let's talk about President Obama and his super PACs, because he recently said that he is embracing super PACs. Bloomberg reported last month that Jim Messina, President Obama's campaign manager, assured a group of Democratic donors from the financial services industry that the administration and the president will not demonize Wall Street as he stresses populist appeals in his reelection campaign. Two people at the meeting told the reporter Hans Nichols this. So what are your thoughts on this? How is this going to play out with the Obama PACs? And Michael, what do we know about these Obama super PACs so far?
Well, Democratic operatives have long been embracing the super PAC creatures and also pushing the envelope in terms of the campaign finance world. When you looked at the 2010 election cycle, there is about $65 million spent by all super PACs, and 45% of that money did aid Democrats, and 55% aided Republicans. It was really the non-disclosing 501c organizations where there was a big partisan gap. In the 2010 election cycle, non-disclosing groups aided conservatives with about $120 million compared to just about $12 million aiding Democrats. So a 10-to-1 difference in terms of the 501c and other non-disclosing organizations. So Democrats are really trying to catch up here. They are saying they want to fight fire with fire and are embracing super PACs in a way that they didn't necessarily last cycle, including President Obama last month saying that he is okay with his top campaign officials or top White House officials, including cabinet members, going out, pounding the pavement, trying to help raise money for these new groups so they aren't flooded by Republican spending.
I think, as you said, though, this means that the Obama administration also has said, we're not going to attack Wall Street.
Right.
When Wall Street needs attacking. And that's just one really prominent example of how the political discourse is being shaped by Citizens United and the real issues that need to be discussed, the real problems that our country is facing can't be addressed because people have to live in fear. It's an incredible disappointment that the Obama administration started and embraced the idea of a super PAC, but there was really nothing they could do. It was something they had to do in order to run the election cycle. And fortunately, as they did it, they also called for a constitutional amendment and came out for a constitutional amendment. But really, it's influencing the discourse in this country in such deep ways and in such everyday ways. And that's a clear example of it.
And the Griot had a piece recently about Obama super PACs. One is called American Bridge 21st Century. They've raised about 6.4 million. Donors range from Hollywood businessman Stephen Bing to unions such as AFSCME. And then we've got a super PAC called Priorities USA, and they've raised about $4.4 million. What do we know so far about who's behind these super PACs?
Well, I think go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Michael. As you said, labor unions are a key figure in who's funding Democratic super PACs, as well as many Hollywood figures. Jeffrey Katzenberg of DreamWorks provided the first $2 million contributions to the main pro-Obama Priorities USA Action super PAC. Just recently, Bill Maher said that he was donating $1 million to this group. So Democrats are trying to turn to the traditional quarters where they raise money. That's often Hollywood, lawyers, and unions.
But it's also just two important points. I mean, first, it's just astounding, just the idea that people are giving millions of dollars to the elections. And it really means that we don't have a voice, that we, the people, don't have a voice, that more and more, if this stands, they don't have to listen to us. And it's just really profound to hear numbers like that and to think about whether any of us who are part of the 99% have any chance at influencing what happens if elected officials have to raise money from these extreme wealth. And then another important point is the unions are firmly behind the campaign for a constitutional amendment. And really almost there are a few almost every week now are coming and joining us in this campaign. And the unions recognize that while this has, in a very immediate sense, benefited them, that they can spend more money on the elections, it has a tremendous negative impact on unions. And that now, for example, Governor Walker in Wisconsin is really seen as a Citizens United baby, as a result of Citizens United, that he was elected and that he's had the gall to think that he can influence that he can push forward these tremendous anti-union policies because he knows that he has the big backing of the Koch brothers and the big backing of these industries, that he can do that. And the unions are really starting to see that in a deep way and get very much behind the campaign calling for a constitutional amendment. And we also differentiate between for-profit and non-profit corporations, and Public Citizen supports the Sanders-Deutsch Amendment, which by Senator Sanders and Congressman Deutsch, which says that for-profit corporations cannot contribute to elections. It gives Congress and local governments the power to regulate any sort of contributions, but it doesn't flat-out ban nonprofit contributions. And we think that it's important to make that differentiation because for-profit corporations are associations of individuals, are very different than profit-driven institutions. And we think that it's important that not-for-profit corporations also keep other forms of constitutional rights in the process.
That is Jonah Minkoff-Zern. He's senior organizer of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign. We're also joined by Michael Beckel, politics reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. And we have about 10 minutes left, and we'd love to hear your opinions on this. What are your thoughts about the role that money plays in politics? What are the solutions here? It seems like so many more people on all walks of political life are really talking about Citizens United and money in politics. So what should be done about this? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have two similar emails, one from Bill in Berkeley, who says, I'm 64, and I've lived through repeated cycles of campaign reform. Each one promised to limit the role of money in politics, and each failed miserably. I finally concluded that the real problem is not money, but the fact that the voting population responds to the ads and the polls produced by the consultants that the money buys. As long as we don't know how to deconstruct all of this propaganda, the money to produce it will always find ways to do so. We have another email from Matt who says, have things gone so far that people who were not paying attention to big money are paying attention now? For example, you've got the Montana Supreme Court standing up to Citizens United. Stephen Colbert is starting his own super PAC and putting it on Comedy Central. Are you seeing a shift in public consciousness? And if so, what does that really mean? What would you say, Jonah?
Well, that's really when we talk about the role that Nancy Pelosi is playing in pushing for a constitutional amendment. When we talk about President Obama calling for a constitutional amendment, they're doing that because of this incredible shift of consciousness. The ways that this campaign has been successful over the last 6 months are well beyond any of our expectations or goals, and that's really because of the incredible social movement of the 99% that's taking place, because of the Occupy movement, and because people really are starting to understand in a very deep way how terrible this impact is, that there really is an incredible awakening and an incredible dialogue about this right now that just really hasn't existed in the recent history. And I think calling for a constitutional amendment and passing a constitutional amendment is a much deeper remedy. And really is what we need to be pushing for, that we need to make this not something that can be overturned by another Supreme Court ruling, but make it the law of the land, that corporations are not people, that money is not speech, and that we can't have this unfettered amount of money going into our election and really call ourselves a democracy or expect that the government will stand for the people. And it's that movement, and I really just want to take a moment to encourage people to get involved, that it's people's actions that are making a change. AJR 22, Assembly Joint Resolution 22, is moving forward in California, calling for a constitutional amendment. The California State Legislature is about to vote in Judiciary Committee in the coming weeks, and moving that forward through the state legislature, and many states across the country are doing the same. I think there's about, I think because they're happening almost faster than we can even count right now, but there's about 12 states right now that have resolutions moving forward. New Mexico and Hawaii have already passed them. And then this spring, if you go to resolutionsweek.org, we're working to pass resolutions all over the country, local and state resolutions calling for a constitutional amendment. Oakland has passed one. Berkeley has passed one. San Francisco City Council has not yet passed one. So we really want to have city councils calling for a constitutional amendment and also putting the issue on the ballot before the voters so voters can stand up like they've done in several cities already and call for a constitutional amendment.
And do you think pressure caused Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren and Republican Senator Scott Brown to call on third-party groups to stay off the airwaves in Massachusetts, basically calling a super PAC truce? Is that why they did it?
I think that's it's actually not something I was aware of, but that makes sense. And that really people really are showing deep outrage. There's a resolution moving forward in Massachusetts that has broad popularity, and a lot of people have brought it to their town halls in Massachusetts, and there's just there's a growing sense that something's not right, and people really want change.
This is interesting, actually, Michael. Have you been following this? Because the League of Conservation Voters they bought an ad for about $2 million attacking Brown's environmental record, and they said for now they'll abide by the pact. But Politico says whether or not this will really amount to anything is another question entirely. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Citizens United was a game changer, and one of the ways that it changed the game is that at any point in the electoral process, a group can come in and launch a 11th hour attack against somebody.
Right, but I mean, with the super PAC truce in Massachusetts, do you think that these groups will abide by this and say, all right, Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown, you don't want us to run ads, we won't do it?
So there's a lot of incentive for politicians to try to limit the potential for these groups to come in. And it's going to be an interesting situation to see if groups abide by this, not only in Massachusetts, but also in Montana. We had Senator Tester and Representative Raybert, who is running to try to unseat Tester. They've been going back and forth trying to come up with some sort of agreement that both of their campaigns are happy with and that outside groups would be limited. But outside groups have been a big player. They were a big player in 2010, and they might not want to sit on the sideline in some of these high-profile races.
Let's go. We have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Moses in Fremont. Hi, Moses. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, actually. First of all, I'd like to thank the host and the guests for a really interesting conversation. I love this program. And
thank you.
Anyway, what I wanted to say was I think I heard a really right on the point comment from Robin Williams once doing stand up when he said that elections should be run like NASCAR, and the candidates for office ought to have like displayed on their, you know, on them, who is supporting them, you know, sponsored by Coca-Cola or sponsored by, you know, Bank of America. Because, you know, I mean, I think that I think that there's some truth to it. Like, if people knew who was actually sponsoring their candidates, you know, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat, they might not vote for them at all.
Yeah, it's such a great image when you think about them walking around with blazers, showing things like, you know, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs. Thank you for the call. We also have an email from David who says, who gave this decision this George Orwellian or more likely Karl Rovian name? It's like Operation Iraqi Freedom or Desert Storm or Be All That You Can Be. Once these slogans get in the public's mind, it becomes embedded in the unconscious as a positive instead of a negative. All very, very carefully thought out, no doubt.
Yeah, Citizens United is a extreme right wing organization that works to cut back healthcare, works to cut back that works to cut back Social Security, that they're this organization, and they are very Orwellian, their name. And it is, it's a challenge that we dealt with when we were working to build this campaign. Was there a way to rebrand it or call it something else? And we felt like there, and that's what people know the Supreme Court ruling as, there wasn't a way to do it. But it has been a challenge to say, well, this is, and I think that there's an incredible consciousness. Just in the last year, the number of people in the country who know about the ruling has gone from 25% to over 50% who know what Citizens United is. So people are really aware of it and are aware of its tremendously negative consequences. But it is Orwellian, the name Citizens United, doing such terrible things to our democracy and to our country.
So in our remaining minutes, where does this go from here, and what is most effective in terms of people getting involved? Jonah?
Well, I would encourage people to go to our website, democracyisforpeople.org, democracyisforpeople.org, and sign our petition, and you'll start getting information about the campaign. As you said, we're moving 52 resolutions in Vermont today at town hall meetings, and we're working to pass hundreds of resolutions around the country this spring. So I would really encourage people to get involved in passing local resolutions calling for a constitutional amendment, and to get involved in pushing forward AJR 22 on the state level in California, talking to assembly members and senators there.
Thank you. And Michael, brief final thoughts?
Yeah, we here at the Center for Public Integrity are going to be keeping a close eye on the spending that's going on in the election and what super PACs and other organizations are spending and what they want. You can follow all of that online at iwatchnews.org. We are a nonprofit, a 501c3 organization, and if you like what we're doing, we accept donations as well.
All right. Well, and we will continue following the money. Jonah Minkoff-Zern is senior organizer of Public Citizens Democracy is for People campaign, and Michael Beckel is a politics reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's the path to justice for domestic workers? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the struggles and successes of domestic workers. New York recently passed a domestic workers' bill of rights, which provides standards and protections for an otherwise unregulated and often exploited workforce. A bill pending in California would do the same. So are you a domestic worker? Do you employ one? Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What is fair treatment and how should it be enforced? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in San Francisco. Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.